tonight on Arena. On TV, Too Much, Mixtape and Dexter Resurrection, and new albums from Wet Leg, The Swell Season and Noah Cyrus, all of them up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena, and you can watch us on rte.ie/arena. Starting with TV reviews tonight, Mixtape is a new romantic drama on BBC Two. It's adapted from Jane Sanderson's novel of the same name. Daniel and Alison were once teenager lovers and romance, had great romance in Sheffield in 1989, but then she moved off to Australia. Will their romance be rekindled or not? Well, I know what I want to happen. Stars Teresa Palmer and Jim Sturgess. Dexter Resurrection is on Paramount Plus, and the latest in the crime series about Dexter Morgan, played by Michael C. Hall. In this series, somewhat akin to Bobby Ewing coming out of the shower, I think, Dexter wakes up from a coma after a near-fatal shooting and goes in search of his missing son to make amends while trying to avoid his archenemy. He has a few archenemies, it has to be said, Angel Batista of Miami Metro. But we'll start with Too Much, a romantic comedy on Netflix from the creator of Girls, Lena Dunham. It follows Jessica, a New Yorker reeling from a breakup, who relocates to London to seek out space and avoid all her painful memories. Things change when she meets Felix, an indie musician who sparks a quirky connection despite the clash of cultures. Too Much, as I say, is where we'll start. Megan Stalter plays the character of Jessica here. Will Sharp plays the character of Felix. Megan Stalter, of course, we know from Hacks as the chaotic agent Kayla. What kind of character, Jen, who's not a Lena Dunham fan at all, I think I should say to start out, you huge fan. What kind of character is Statler channeling here for Jessica Salmon? Very different from Kayla?
Very different, I think, because Kayla is all, she's brash, she's in your face, she's in control, whereas Jess, she's a workaholic and she is in a really bad time of her life. That's where we meet her, because her life is in free fall. She is broken up with who she thought was the love of her life. She was planning a future with this man, Zev, who's played by Michael Zagan. And they've been together for 7 years. And then he basically breaks her heart and ends up with an Instagrammer who is played by the model Emily Ratajkowski, and they fall in love very quickly, and Jess has to watch this unfold on social media. So
it's
she's watching
called,
their
she's
updates
fallen
to
in
Instagram.
He's fallen in love with somebody else.
Yes, and okay. She has to watch his sudden proposal to his new girlfriend Wendy by using her pet lizard, putting the ring on the pet lizard for her. And, you know, she's suffering. She's suffering deeply. And, you know,
I hear your defense of her is quite large already. I would say she could stop following him on Instagram. That might be a good start.
No, this is social media. This is young women to a T. You want to obsess. You have to obsess.
All right. And she goes into his apartment.
Maybe not that though. Yeah.
So she breaks into his apartment and confronts him and his new girlfriend in bed. Not the best move, I would have thought.
Yeah, it sure as hell is me. I'm Jessica. Hi.
Wow, this is really surreal.
Oh, is it so surreal?
Jessica, what the fuck are you doing here?
Hi, fucker! How about that?
Girl, are you good?
No, I'm actually not. And guess what? You're a fucking bitch.
Wow, you just woke me up and called me a bitch? Okay. Jessica, I've dealt with this before, right? I want to hold space for how you're feeling, and I understand that things might not be perfect right now for you, but you just broke into our home, and it's giving crazy, it's giving psychotic. Okay. Are you crying?
No, I'm not. No, I don't know. Nothing like this has ever happened before, you know? Just nothing this violent.
Well, I mean, it's not violent yet.
Are you going to punch me in the head until I'm bleeding out on the floor?
Can't we just work this out? You can have a Xanax. We can chill.
Yeah, we can work it out. Sure. Let's just all sit down with a cup of tea and work it out. And you, Zev Jeremiah Goldstein, need to sit down and write on a piece of paper that leaving me is the worst thing that anyone's ever done.
Is it really the worst thing that he has done, I ask myself. That Michael Segan is the accused there, accused by Megan Stalter playing the character of Jessica, and poor old Emily Tara Yakovsky, if I'm saying her name correctly, who wants to hold space for how Jessica is feeling, which is my favourite line in that clip, I have to say. Now, if that's her kind of heartbroken calm down, Megan Stalter, I'm wondering, what is the kind of crazy one like, Chris?
Oh no, that's her setting for most of the show. But unfortunately, that unfortunate episode coincides with sort of a lull at work, which means that a decision is made where she will she'll go from the New York offices. She's involved in media. She's a media something or other. Yeah. At first, you're kind of confused. She's involved in some sort of like television productions, but she transfers from the New York offices to the London offices, and she has this idea in her head of what England is going to be like, and she hears that she's going to be living on this estate, and thinks, I'm going to be in either a Richard Curtis story or a Jane Austen novel here, and is horrified to discover that it's actually a council flat, and that in England, you know, it's always grey, it sometimes rains, and that pub toilets are a nightmare, and that, you know, fairy tale romances aren't around the corner, except maybe they are, because she's only there 5 minutes. She goes to the local pub and she runs into Felix, played very well by Will Sharp, who's this independent musician who thinks he's maybe a little bit of Robert Smith, definitely isn't, definitely not as talented, and he's sort of, I was going to say he's the complete opposite to her, but he's as messed up as she is. He's just a little bit
in a quieter way
about it. But at the same time, he is a walking, talking red flag. I mean, she really shouldn't go there, and he probably shouldn't go there with her. But of course, then we wouldn't have a show.
Yeah, of course, we wouldn't have that. I think I have mentioned that this is Lena Dunham and the creator of Girls, which was such a hit. And then she was quiet for a long time, with kind of feels, certainly as the creator, the showrunner, the main person behind behind a series, Jen. She comes back here. How autobiographical? Because there are autobiographical echoes here, but I'm sure I presume it wasn't quite as crazy.
There is a lot going on that you can kind of link into Lena Dunham's life. She had a very public breakup with Jack Antonoff, who's Taylor Swift's producer. He's a very big pop producer. And, you know, they were with each other for a very long time. And then she ended up herself moving to London and met her now husband, Lewis Felber, who also is a musician, which is kind of funny. And he has the look, a little bit of the look of Felix Offerman. He's also the co-creator of the show. He's credited as the co-creator of the show.
But I guess it doesn't matter whether it's autobiographical or not.
No, but it's not. I mean, she has said, like, there's a million different stories that she's put into this, and purely fictional as well, because, I mean, there's a lot in this. It may look like a fluffy rom-com on the surface. It may look like this fish out of water Emily in Paris story, but it is certainly not. It is actually very complex and complicated. The more and more you go into it, it really is about Jess discovering herself and coming into her own world after being on the brink of completely crashing out of the world.
What I think Jen is touching on, I'm going to call you Jess, what Jen is touching on there, or is alluding to, is this ability that Dunham had, certainly in Girls, and is it here as well, Chris, I'm asking you, that ability to move from, you know, high, just comedy, straightforward romantic comedy, to something a little bit more serious. But she does bring it to kind of darker places, because let's face it, anybody breaking in like that is problematic. It's funny at one level, and when we meet Felix, we begin to realise there's a lot going on, or has gone on, in his background, which leaves him in the damaged situation he's in.
Oh, absolutely. It's they both have messy stories, and Lena Dunham is very good at those kind of messy, awkward, uncomfortable scenes. Like, it's laugh out loud funny in one scene, but then you realise, okay, well, actually there's a reason why these characters are the way they are. I think it's their messiness. I think it's Felix's messiness and Jessica's messiness that makes them interesting to begin with. It's also what makes them, for me anyway, frustrating to be around after 5 or 6 episodes, because I made the mistake of actually binging this. And by the time the 6th episode came along, I think I kind of needed a break from them, because they are, you know, if you do spend enough time with them, you start to kind of find them a little bit annoying. I was actually glad when, I know Jen is completely disagreeing, but I was glad when it spread out a little bit, and we got into, basically Lena Dunham has, I'd say, the best phone book ever, and has drafted an awful lot of famous friends and great actors into this. We've got Naomi Watts, we've got Andrew Scott playing an obnoxious filmmaker, and it's when we saw Rhea Perlman as the grandmother, Rita Wilson as her mum, Lena Dunham actually playing the sister. I wanted to know those characters a lot more.
But you do get to know Lena Dunham's character, I think, Nora, a lot more. She's gone through her own breakup with her husband, who's played by Andrew Rannells, who we know as Elijah from Girls, and he is basically on this sexual rumspringer now. He's told her he wants to break up with her, he wants to go and discover his bisexuality. So she is having a breakdown at home.
But I must say, like you, Jen, I disagree with Chris regarding the, you know, he only got fed up with them after 6 episodes. Didn't take that long for me. I want to know, because I know you're a big fan of Lena Dunham's. But there is something in this series which clearly spoke very strongly to you.
Deeply. I think it's a forensic examination of vulnerability and intimacy on a very deep level, like on normal people level, except for these characters are actually funny. Mm. There's monologues about Jaffa cakes. There's talk about Prime Suspect. This is what we need. The dialogue is so snappy and zingy that you expect from her. But it's about the terrifying nature of falling in love, expectations, the fear that surrounds you, letting a person get to know you and getting to know a person and whether you can trust them, mm-hmm. whether it will all disintegrate and fall to pieces. And it's about those glorious kind of complexities. And I think the chemistry between the two of them is phenomenal. Yeah.
And I must say the acting between Will Sharp and Megan Stalter.
Will Sharp is going to have an Adam Driver career now. Lena Dunham is so good at creating male characters that creep into your subconsciousness.
Yeah, well, it's what I found extraordinary was how they could kind of, you don't see them acting, which is my favourite type of acting.
They're both
no acting
so
visible, which is what I get in those kind of loud, brash scenes. I thought, I can see the acting, please stop.
Mm. They dial it down, and when it's just them together and they're getting to know each other more and more, it feels like a different show. There is work and title bits that are tacked onto it that I don't love. The more Lena Dunham, less work and title as well.
Well, I will not binge. I will have to take it one episode at a time. I did it too, because you need a while to get to know the Will Sharp character. He doesn't really come in until the end of episode one, and then they get going together properly in episode two. Stars and overall from you on this one, Chris?
I think the acting's great, the writing's good, the structure's just a bit too loose. So yeah, one episode at a time, but I'm with Jen. Although Megan Stalter is, you know, supposed to be the star here, Will Sharp is the performer who left the mark on me here. I haven't seen him give a bad performance, but I think this might actually be his best. So yeah, 3 stars for now.
I must say, he makes me want to go back to it. And stars, Jen?
I have to say, episode 5, Pink Valentine, is one of the most affecting pieces of television I've seen all year. It's has to be a 5 out of 5 for me. It is a personal look at how everyone is a ticking time bomb. And even if someone finds you too much, there may be someone else out there who will want more of you.
Well, that's fair enough. Absolutely. Too much is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
For sure. Too much is on Netflix. And a full 5 from Jen. And what did you say, sorry?
We'll go with a 3.
You're going with a 3. Okay, let us move on to... this is another romantic drama, but very different, it has to be said. Mixed Tape on BBC Two. We're in Northern England, in Sheffield, in fact, so there's going to be music, that's for sure. Give us the setup here. I have to say, the teenage stuff in the 1980s and 90s is just like, unless you're made of stone.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah. So explain the two characters that we meet as teens and then later on.
Yeah, we're in Sheffield to begin with in 1989. And we follow this teenager named Daniel, played by newcomer Rory Walton Smith. And he's at a house party. It's Friday night, just another party, but it's not really, because he spots maybe potentially the love of his life across the room. Alison is her name, played by Florence Hunt. She doesn't say much and she doesn't really want to get involved with Daniel at first, but eventually she will let him in. She has a reasons for being guarded, maybe even a complicated family setup, but they communicate at the beginning of their friendship, which ensues into a relationship, the only way that maybe teenagers know how to at this time of their lives, through music. You know, you have a case where Alison is making a lyric sheet for Daniel, you then have Daniel making her a mixtape, you know, The Cure will basically let Alison know how he feels. So we follow their friendship into a relationship, but then 25 years later, we follow Alison and Daniel, you know, middle aged. And seeing where they went in their life, the fact that Daniel didn't become a rock star, he became a rock critic, and he is married, but maybe not happily married, and he's also still in Sheffield, whereas Alison is in Australia, again married, probably not happily married, and has written an internationally renowned bestseller. And we see there are two very different points of their lives, but the fact that she's written a book that's available in his local bookshop makes them want to connect again.
And again, because of social media, he can, he can get in touch with her practically immediately. Let's listen to a clip. The part of the problem in terms of radio is certainly in those early episodes, the teenagers, it's all about seeing them with
the longing, the looks
across
staring into the distance.
All of that. It's all looks and handing each other sheets of paper. So we have to go to the older couple. And we chose to go to, in fact, to Jim Sturgis, who's left behind in Sheffield, a freelance, in inverted commas, journalist, but now he wants to write this book. His wife, Siobhan O'Kelly, played by Siobhan O'Kelly, his wife, Catherine, played by Siobhan O'Kelly, she's been paying all the bills up to this, and obviously they've a lovely house and she's doing very well. And their older friend, Duncan, played by Alexis Rodney, is over for dinner.
Morning.
You all right?
Christ, God, I've been looking for that. Duncan wants you.
Yeah, he wants to talk about this new book that you're writing.
Well, did you talk to him?
No. He sent you a text. Were you going to tell me?
Well, there was something to tell. Yeah, I was.
Do you remember what you were like the last time you wrote a book? Because I do. I mean, me and Alex, we had to tiptoe around the house. You practically went into a cave. Why now? You've been freelancing for years and we've got by on my...
On your wage, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that we were going to seize the moment. Do the road trip, like I said.
I'm not being funny, Cap, but I mean, you just sprung this on me yesterday.
There you go. Siobhan O'Kelly as Catherine and Jim Sturgess as Daniel. And that's the older English couple at this point, Jen. Mm. We also meet the older version of the Australian couple. He's a very successful doctor, and the young, what's her name? The other character.
Alison
has become this highly successful novelist, but both marriages are in real trouble.
They are in real trouble, and to be honest, with this show, I preferred the past more. Mm. I preferred when you got to know young Alison and young Dan, because I think the acting by them, I mean, not to say that, you know, Jim Sturgess isn't great, because he is, but I think Rory Walton-Smith and Florence Hunt have to be commended here.
They're brilliant. Yeah.
They're just a lovely energy about them, and you believe that this is like they're cleaving to this romance against the odds. Mm. And Alison is very reticent to share her, where she comes from, about her family life. She had a very disordered family life. She lives in a flat with her brother Peter, her older brother Peter, who she adores, who is harbouring this desire to escape from Sheffield and everything that is within it, which means their home life. They have a mother who is an alcoholic and she's absent, very chaotic. She also lets her would-be boyfriend rule the roost and come in and out of the flat as much as he pleases. It's chaotic, to say the least. Mm. And Alison finds this home within Dan's family, which are gorgeously, beautifully played and beautifully realised by Mark O'Halloran as the father, who is obsessed with pigeon. He's a pigeon fancier. And those scenes with Alison, him sharing with Alison his love, the generosity and genteelness of caring for these pigeons are very affecting and beautiful. And I have to say, Helen Bean as well, as the more
as
suspicious.
The
she's the suspicious mother. She's cautious about...
Oh, it's her son.
About this. Well, she is. Alison is the bird with the broken wing that has been brought into their family life, and she doesn't want to disrupt her son and where he's going. And I think that's the real bones of this story. And when it kind of goes out into the older version of these characters, with Jim Sturgess, I think he's very believable as this would-be writer, journalist who's tormented about the life that he could have had. And I think it's a great little device, the fact that he feels like he can't send a text message to Alison.
Yeah.
He has to send a song. He can only communicate by the song. Yet again, is saying, that can express something that he can't say.
There is, because, I mean, obviously in the 80s and 90s it was the mixtape or it was the lyric sheet. You know, that was the mode of communication. It was the way you did it, and then he has no facility to make that type of communication.
No, and it's not the same. It's not the same sending someone a Spotify link. It's a little less romantic.
Creepy.
It is a little bit creepy. Yeah, I mean, you two are both married, and you haven't seen one another for 25 years. So the fact that we're supposed to kind of get behind them, that's a little bit maybe problematic. And yeah, I'm with Jen. When we're with teenage Daniel and Alison, it's lovely. It's engaging. It's very interesting. It's dreamlike, and it just works. I actually would have preferred if the series was in chronological order, maybe if we spent the first two episodes with the teenagers and not known what was going to happen to them later on. But that's not to say that Jim Sturgess and Teresa Palmer don't give great performances. I found it to be like this kind of, at times, sentimental cross between normal people minus the soul-shattering anxiety, High Fidelity minus the jokes, and One Day, because I just kept thinking Jim Sturgess has been here before. He played the Dexter character in the One Day film, and again, it's that, you know, what could have happened between us if we both hadn't taken separate paths.
And Mark O'Halloran and Helen Bean, who actually play the parents in both manifestations.
That stretched my suspension of disbelief to its very limits. It's a bit incredulous, because Jim Sturgess, when he's sitting alongside Mark O'Halloran calling him dad, they're nearly the same age. And I know they don't want to get rid of two brilliant actors, and they are sensational in it, I have to say.
And the two teenage actors, as it were, they couldn't have aged up in a way that Helen Behan and Mark O'Halloran could possibly. Did it work overall for you, though?
It did. It's kind of a funny one, because
it's four episodes, which is
four episodes, pleasant. Which is nice. Yeah, it's tidy. O'Halloran is brilliant here and actually works his way around the Sheffield accent beautifully. But yeah, I just kept thinking Sean Connery and Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones, you guys are not father and son. You shouldn't be playing father and son. But that doesn't say that that doesn't mean that the performances aren't brilliant. There are a few bumps along the way, but it's a lovely piece of television. I will stick with it until the end. So I'm going to say 3.5 out of 5.
3.5. What are you saying, Jen?
I would say the same. There's a few ropey moments that turn something that's a quietly lovely drama about passion and excitement, it kind of tips it over the edge a bit. But I think it's very enjoyable, and I think it might be a hidden gem for people this week coming out.
Yeah, because it's on BBC Two, but I think it will be coming onto Irish television later because it's an Irish-Australian co. There's lots of co-production involved here, and I think it'll be coming maybe in the autumn at some point along the way. But it's on BBC at the moment for sure. Okay, so sorry, I missed. There was what was the
three and a half.
Three and a half from both of you. So that's certainly above average. Let us move on then to another season of Dexter on Paramount with Michael C. Hall. Dexter Resurrection, referring to the fact that he was shot in the last series by his son. But no, he just went into a coma. I mean, I really did think, are we back in the days of Bobby walking out of the shower in Dallas?
I think we might be, yeah. It's what Dexter just won't die.
He won't die.
No. And I think it was, I think Clyde Phillips is the man behind this show. Mm. When Dexter finished in 2013, I think it was, famously it had one of the worst received finales in television history. Like everyone, even Michael C. Hall, who played the character for 7 or 8 years, wasn't happy with how it ended. So the continuation series from maybe 2020.
Yeah, people forgive that.
Was a way to kind of...
Let's sort it out.
And he was shot by his son. He shot in the heart by his son, Harrison, at the end of that series. And Clive Phillips had said, that's it. We're going to do prequels after that. Michael C. Hall will be involved in a narrator capacity. But we're not going to continue the Dexter story. He dies. Well, unfortunately, everybody tuned in to that continuation series.
So the television executive has decided we are doing...
We're not done with Dexter, basically. So this one picks up then after that, and this idea that Dexter had tried to start a new life for himself in upstate New York. He's in small town America. He's trying to be, his name's Jim Lindsay, he's trying to be someone else, but he's actually spent the last 10 weeks in a coma. All of his crimes have been covered up by his police chief ex-girlfriend. He does have Angel Batista, the detective from Miami, still following him around. What he doesn't have is his son, because his son has actually decided, no, I'm out of here, shot my dad, I'm going to leave him there. Go to New York, start a new life for myself, try not to be a serial killer because he also has murderous tendencies. But unfortunately, he gets himself into trouble in New York, the kind of trouble that makes headlines, the kind of headlines that Dexter sees from his hospital bed and thinks, I'm going to have to help him out here.
I taught him most of the things that he's done there. Yeah. Let's have a listen to a scene where Dexter, Michael C. Hall, wakes up after being in a coma for 10 weeks. I still can't get my head past that bit, I'm afraid. He has a visit from Deputy Sheriff Teddy Reedy. Now, he's also been accidentally shot by a member of that force.
Yes.
Is that his ex-girlfriend? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. She accidentally shot him.
So many shootings.
Yeah.
Refuses
and,
to
and
die.
All of them missed him. Peculiarly enough. So the sheriff is a little bit anxious that he might follow through with charges on that event.
It's Rangela. She left town with Audrey after, you know, everything. Which makes me acting sheriff of Iron Lake. Angela was so sorry about mistakenly arresting you for the murder of Matt Caldwell. Obviously, it turned out his dad. Well, you know. Mm-hmm. She was even more sorry about shooting you. When she found that bullet hole in your cell, which proved that Logan had shot at you and you were just defending yourself, she felt like shit. Look, all pleasantries aside, I have to fulfill my duties as acting sheriff of Iron Lake. We don't have a lot of resources, but I have to enforce justice. That's the job. So, do you want to press charges against the Iron Lake Sheriff's Department for Chief Angela Bishop shooting you?
No. No, that's okay.
Ah, that's not nice, Michael. The serial killer is not going to press charges.
He's okay about it.
Yeah. So that's a scene from Dexter Resurrection. I mean, he is a very interesting character, but you kind of feel, can you not just leave it alone?
Well, I don't think Michael C. Hall can play another character at this point.
He loves him so much. Like, I've read interviews with him recently, and he's like, I just always want to go back to Dexter, yeah. which I find hilarious because I would know him as David from 6 Feet Under, and I think that's one of the
yeah.
most
yeah.
beautiful performances on TV, in TV history. And I'm thinking, yeah. why Dexter? But I think it's because he has so much fun with this character. Yeah. And to be honest, he's here chewing the scenery. He's back at it, talking to himself, walking down the road. And weirdly, it works.
Yeah,
the other
side of it is, and I think you kind of need to have seen the other series to understand the opening sequence where all the ghosts of people he has murdered yes. in the past are coming to visit him.
He's like the Scrooge of serial killers yeah. at that point. So he's lying in his hospital bed and he's visited by these several ghosts of the past and he's having visions of his old misdeeds, but he's also thinking, am I ready to rise again? Is this my resurrection? And I guess it's like the family that slays together stays together because he wants to look after his son and he's obsessed now with how his son is working things out as a nascent serial killer, I guess.
Dexter's own father was also a serial killer, runs in the family.
He was actually around as a ghost, so it's like this weird family tree of darkness. And the strangest thing is when, it is kind of funny, because Dexter is self-aware. There is a lot of humour in there. And when he does get to New York to try and find Harrison, he also gets caught up with the fact that there is a serial killer now going around killing Uber drivers calling himself the Dark Passenger. And Dexter is more annoyed that he's using his IP than actually that he's going around killing people.
He has a great line too. I think the first three ghosts come in and then a fourth ghost appears to him and he says, I thought these only came in three.
Yeah. You know? Oh, it's so self-aware. Yeah.
And it is quite blackly humorous in places. Overall, and stars from you on this one, Chris?
I think that's the big thing. The fact that it's in on the joke really does help. It's full of these extraordinary coincidences and conveniences in the plot department, but I actually enjoyed those silly twists and turns. I enjoyed some star cameos in there. I won't say who they're playing, but Uma Thurman, Peter Dinklage is in there. And I think Michael C. Hall, I think he's destined to play this character until he's old and grey, but if he's enjoying himself and if we're enjoying it too, then what's the harm?
Right at the end of episode one when I thought and then Uma Thurman appears and they're going to make me watch episode two.
They're reeling you in.
Okay, so what'd you say, stars?
We'll go with 3 stars.
3, and you said, Jen?
I think there's a lot of fan service here, a lot of callbacks that people will be happy about, but that doesn't mean that it's a dud. I do think that Resurrection, it's a story that doesn't need to be told, but it has the decency to actually be told well, and I think that's because of Michael C. Hall's performance. So
he's allowed to wake up from his coma.
Yes.
That's it. All right. Too Much is streaming on Netflix. Jen Gannon and Chris Wasser, as usual, with us on TV this evening. Too Much is streaming on Netflix. Mixtape begins on BBC Two next Tuesday. I think there are 2 episodes next week. And Dexter Resurrection is on Paramount Plus. Moisturiser by Wet Leg, Forward by the Swell Season, and I Want My Loved Ones to Go With Me by Noah Cyrus are this week's albums up for review. Wet Leg follow up their acclaimed debut with Moisturiser, sophomore album that expands their post-punk sound while retaining the wit and energy that made them a breakout in 2022. Forward, long-awaited return, I think it's safe to say, of the Swell Season. That's Glenn Hansard and Marketa Irglova. Last full-length release, believe it or not, was in 2009. God, that long ago. Strict Joy, known for their Oscar-winning hit, of course, Falling Slowly from Once, and their blend of folk, acoustic, classical influences. Duo's new album reflects their shared history. And finally, Noah Cyrus delivers I Want My Loved Ones to Go With Me, country-rooted album that distances her, for sure, from her pop expectations. Of course, she's also always referred to as the sister of Miley. We should say Miley Cyrus is her sister. Billy Ray is her father. And Cyrus here leans into Americana and Southern Gothic tones on a record. Really shows off, I think, her voice and her ability to tell a story. I'm trying to find the track that I'm looking for from Wet Leg, and I just can't see it. So I'm going to hope that Liam outside in the production area can see it. I'm looking for Moisturiser from Wet Leg, if you can see it there. Oh, yes, now I can see it sitting over somewhere else. Can we see it? No, we can't see it. We're going to go with a totally different one. We're going with CPR from Wet Leg. CPR, the title of the track, opening track, in fact, on Wet Leg's new album, the album being called Moisturiser. Eamon Sweeney and Owen Glacken are our reviewers on this Friday evening. When we talk about Wet Leg, who are we talking about, Owen?
Well, they're a British indie rock band. They're formed only in 2019, so they're still, you know, they're still a newish band, although it is 6 years ago, I suppose, really. But rhythm guitar player and lead singer Ryan Tisdale and lead guitarist Hester Chambers are the kind of the originators, and for me certainly are the standouts in this record. But their self-titled debut album came out in 2022. It was Grammys and Brit Awards and all that kind of stuff in the pocket. And, you know, they're really well known for their great energy and their sort of quirkiness. And they've been a huge band, really, for the last couple of years.
And the deadpan delivery, as we got, particularly in that track, Eamon. But what I remember, it wasn't Shays Long was their
Shays Long.
Big
hit.
And it had the kind of facility of maybe being a kind of a, like a novelty number. But I think they prove on this album that there's more to it than just the, because it was making fun out of the Chaise Longue. It was very witty, but these songs have a kind of a dark edge underneath the deadpan delivery.
Absolutely. Well, you know, kind of as memorably with Blondie, to get away from Debbie Harry, the infamous Bull and Bad was going like, Blondie is a band.
Yeah.
This is very much, they've recruited their touring band to add much more guitar texture. So kind of like the two pieces swelled up to a five-piece guitar band. All those kind of novelty rock influences are present and correct, and like the Breeders, Pixies, the deadpan delivery, Chaise Longue, you just couldn't get it out of your head. This is still really earwormy. The difference is the guitar's texture is a lot better. Mm. This is a better one for the guitar nerds. But don't worry, they haven't gone all experimental, it hasn't gone turned into My Bloody Valentine or anything. It's still very, very pop. Yeah. It's earworms that will not get out of your head.
Yeah, and they really do get in on you. But there still is that kind of wit and energy. I mean, a track called Davina McCall, for example.
And a gorgeous song
have,
it is as well.
They have fun with it all.
Yeah, they do. And I was actually, on my first listen to this album, I was in the car with my wife and the names of the songs were up on the screen and she was just giggling to herself with the ridiculous names. I could kind of go on and on about the guitar playing, and you just touched on it there, Eamon. This album for me, when I will go back to this album, and I think I will, it's going to be for the guitar stuff. I mean, and not so much the deadpan witty delivery, which is great and all. I thought the guitar playing was just absolutely brilliant. And there's what Hester can do with four or five notes and these kind of really punchy little riffs. And something that's really important, I think, and maybe lost, is it makes you want to pick up guitar and go, what's she playing there? It makes you want to mimic it. I think people are going to be inspired by this album from a guitar point of view.
Well, you mentioned the Davina. The title you write, your Monge 2, Pond Song, Pokemon, Pillow Talk, Don't Speak, and the one that we're about to listen to, Davina McCall. There we have it, Davina McCall, that track from the album Moisturiser. There is no track Moisturiser, that's why I couldn't find it. The album is called Moisturiser.
In this heat, we all need to say Moisturiser. Yeah,
absolutely. The album Moisturiser from Wet Leg. I think you both enjoyed this. Overall, and stars from you, Eamon, first of all?
I'll go 3.5. Very strong album. Funny enough, the guitar stuff is brilliant. There's something about the deadpan delivery. I feel a little bit samey after a while.
Right, yeah, so you're a bit like what Owen's saying, you'll be going back for the guitar rather than the deadpan delivery. And overall, and stars from you, Eamon. Owen, sorry.
Yeah, the same, I'm a little bit more generous with 4 stars.
4 stars from you. All right, let us move on then to the swell season and forward. 2 decades since their debut in 2006. Marketa Erglova was only 18 for that release, 19 when she won the Oscar for Best Original Song for Falling Slowly from Once with Glenn Hansard. What stood out to you? I mean, even the title Forward says a lot.
Absolutely.
Here, doesn't it, Owen?
Yeah.
I'm going to call both of you the wrong name all night. I for some reason earlier today I said, oh yeah, they're both called the same name, but no, you're not. Eamon is Eamon and Owen is Owen. So Eamon.
Forward, there is on this album, especially the track Great Weight, this trying to find a kind of a new sound and going beyond the kind of the Van Morrison, Bob Dylan influences, using Marquetta in one track and in its entirety, which is fantastic, getting the focus off Glenn all the time. That has this trick, and I think people were used to be, and a lot of the tracks kind of follow the thing, there's the two settings. Here's Glenn, and then here comes Marquetta. Mm. He's kind of really impassioned. She's kind of very, very, very sweet and fragile. And you kind of go, oh, that's a bit. But it builds and builds and builds and builds. And by the song's end, you're there.
Yeah.
It dragged you in, kind of thing. It's, and they do that repeatedly, which is how I mean.
Well, let's have a listen to the one you mentioned. It starts with a song that features Glenn pretty much to the fore, but then the second track on the album has Marquetta or Glover to the fore, People We Used To Be. Oh, I don't know about you, but when I hear that song, I see a stage musical. I'm calling it twice. Mm-hmm. I mean, right across the album, I mean, that song in particular, which is only the second song on the album, but as you go further down the track listing, I could really see, you know, I could see how this would all add up to a story.
You can see them on the stage, and the background chorus starts rising to the front of the stage, and they're all standing shoulder to shoulder. You can really see it in some of these songs. And I think there's no harm in that.
No harm at all.
It's not. I mean, there are moments where it veers into schmaltz, and I'm just being a little bit critical because I do love this album, but a lot of the songs kind of reinforce the, you know, we're looking forward as the album title goes, and we're all together, and life's great, and we're hopeful, and all this kind of stuff, and it's beautiful. But it gets a little bit schmaltzy, and then the stage musical kind of production definitely drives that home as well. But that said, there's some gorgeous songs in here. Great Weight. Glenn leans into
really
the sort of
swampy blues,
the dark
type of
carnival humor. Sort of ramshackle Tom Waits buzz. There's a song I have to mention. I don't know if we're going to play it or not, but it's a song called I Leave Everything to You, which is very much Marquetta to the fore, which is one of the most beautiful songs I've heard in a long time and really stopped me in my tracks. And as you said, Marquetta talks herself about how she, at times when the swell season were in that first, whatever, 5 or 6 years kind of haze, she felt maybe like she was kind of on the sidelines and a bit insecure. But a song like this, she really has shown what she has.
Well, funny, that was the one that I had done. I don't have, because we've had Marquetta, so we have to give Glenn a little bit of our time. But that was the one when I said, this could be a Disney song, and not in a pejorative way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Writing a Disney song is it's not an easy thing to do. Everybody 100%. Would be doing it if you could. And it struck me. This is a stage. This is a screen. This is a screen of her. But let's listen to a little bit of Glenn's voice as well. When you first hear Marquetta, it's the piano. When you first hear Glenn, of course, it's the guitar in Factory Street Bells. Oh, there you go. And again, you can see the father singing to his son, you know. And later on in other songs, Marquetta, that's Glenn Hansard with this Swell Season and Factory Street Bells song that opens the album Forward. And later on, Marquetta Ergova similarly seems to be singing about parenthood in various ways. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard our TV reviews earlier on where we heard about this teenage couple in Sheffield in the 80s and 90s, and then they meet later on in life. It kind of struck me, there's a touch of that about this.
Absolutely. There is a kind of a narrative arc there, and a kind of like a former couple. 20 years later, more than 20 years.
And the fictional couple of once well,
absolutely.
Were in my mind. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and just like Factory Street Bells, you know, hats off, Glenn. To write a song, you know, about your child, a lot of people, that's a role that sometimes people have faltered in.
Yeah.
So to do that well, you know, kind of deserves an awful lot of credit.
Well, it sounds to me as this album worked very well for both of you. Stars and overall from you, Eamon.
I would go overall very impressive, a lot better than I thought it would be. I would have been one of those annoying people going, oh, would I ever stop the side approach and get back to the frames? This actually is kind of going, no, this is
a really good band,
four stars for me.
Four stars from Eamon. Owen?
Yeah, I mean, as a Frames fan, they were the band of my teens. Glenn has gone on to write songs in a solo venture, and now again back with Marquetta, the two of them are writing songs that, as a Frames fan, I never thought Glenn would write. I never thought we'd see the soul man Glenn and all that kind of stuff, but it's beautiful. It's four stars for me.
Four stars, that's pretty solid from both of you. The Swell Season and an album called Forward. Okay, one more to do from Noah Cyrus, and that'll be after these. Owen Glack and Eamon Sweeney still with me. We've spoken about Wet Leg and the Swell Season. Now we're moving on to Noah Cyrus and her new album, I Want My Loved Ones to Go With Me. It opens with a track called I Saw the Mountains. I Saw the Mountains, opening track from Noah Cyrus and the new album, which is called I Want My Loved Ones to Go With Me. I saw the mountain saw me, I swam the river swam me. Mm. Now, if you heard those lyrics by themselves, you'd say you want to be very good to deliver those and to make me believe you. But I do totally and absolutely believe her that somehow this is an absolute bearing of the soul. I've, whatever metaphor she's playing there, I've looked at the mountain, the mountain's looked back at me, and now I'm at one with whatever's around me.
That's it. Well, when I started out, and that's the opening track of the album we just heard, and I have to say that cynical devil was on my shoulder.
Going, yeah.
Nepo, baby, Nepo.
Well, yeah, it's the whole Cyrus family.
But now I'm embarrassed to almost say that, because it's a nasty place to start and you listen from. And immediately that devil got flicked off my shoulder. Immediately, when I heard that line, I saw the mountain and the mountain saw me. What does it mean? I have no clue. But I was just in immediately and I was totally taken with it. And that authenticity travels absolutely throughout. Yeah.
And that opening track, it kind of sets the stall out to a certain extent, Eamon. But if she wants her loved ones to go with her, as the album suggests, the album title suggests, they're going country. Because the further the album goes, it's a very country style album.
Yes,
I don't know how to describe it, in a very open and honest way.
And as somebody who doesn't really like country music, or certainly not mainstream country music, she lures me in because she's got some real all country greats here. She's got Fleet Foxes, she's got Bill Callahan, also known as Smog. As we've all already said, she does have a good voice. Mm. It does lure you in. The musicianship is really good. I, you know, kind of like as Owen was saying, my expectations on this were very, very low, and I was pleasantly surprised. As in, this is a very good.
Well, it's a real lesson, as Owen said on the Nepo Baby thing. You know, just because somebody is related to somebody who's famous doesn't mean that they shouldn't get a chance.
It was a deeply humbling experience.
Yeah,
for me,
you know, if they get things on their own merit, because the door might be open, but you have to keep the door open. And certainly, she's doing this. Is this album number two or album number three?
It's her second full album.
Yeah, second album.
EPs and singles and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
But you know, okay. I saw the mountain. The mountain saw me. Has a kind of an open youthfulness to it. Then there are songs like "What's It All For," which could have
sat really nicely on one of Johnny Cash's American recordings, I think.
Yeah. What is it? How can you love anymore? Till you don't love anymore. I haven't got the lyric right there, but it's kind of this idea: you have to love so much, and then you can't love anymore. And if that's the way it is, what's the point?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a line about why have children if you can't love them, and it's really quite bleak.
In places.
And again, it feels like she's earned her cynicism. You know what I mean? It feels like it's lived in. It's authentic. I can't not talk about her voice because, my God, it's just so soulful. She's so gifted, and it is absolutely, as you said, I'm downright country. She sits, all of a sudden, she sits for me alongside Emmylou Harris and Nancy Griffiths and Iris DeMent and all of these absolute classic country vocalists. She's up there for me now.
Yeah, I saw that Owen had said those names, and I thought those are big names. But I think he's probably right, Eamon, that
it's
she sits in that pantheon.
Yeah. Absolutely, like, you know, this. I don't feel like this is not a record I'd be going back to a lot, or maybe at all. But I can certainly admire where it's coming from, and Owen is right there. Like there's a certain assurance and confidence about it, and the fact that it goes, you know, quite deep and quite bleak as well, and is essentially kind of about family. And her brother reworks the very first song that Billy Ray Cyrus ever wrote. On paper, that to me sounds absolutely horrendous. In reality, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if you're going to put yourself in a track with Bill Callahan, you better be able to match up to him. So let's listen to how she does that in the closing track on the album, which is called XXX. I just wanted to get to the point where you heard her voice by itself and how well it sits alongside Bill Callahan's voice. I mean, it's an extraordinary duet between the two of them.
Yeah,
Owen.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a great variety in songs here. It's not all kind of, we've heard some kind of the downtrodden stuff.
Yeah.
There's a gorgeous song, Apple Tree, which she veers into sort of southern gothic shades of Lana Del Rey and Ethel Kane. And there's a song called Way of the World, which showcases this lovely Americana coming of age storytelling. There's a lot going on in this album.
And the other thing is, I mean, the songs take a while to get going sometimes. So we heard two songs that start pretty quietly with the guitar, but there's an extraordinary range of instruments across the
absolutely.
Album.
Absolutely. We've got a pedal steel, banjo, dulcimer, mandolin, cello, acoustic guitars. It's really like Owen mentioned those American recordings, Johnny Cash,
and
that Rick Rubin, you know, deep, really just top notch production of country music. There's elements of that certainly in this.
Yeah, and the song, I mean, a song like Love is a Canyon, even the title of that is so wonderful.
And I just want to pay tribute to some of the producers, actually. Mike Crossy, our own Mike Crossy, up from Up the Road in Belfast, I think did a wonderful job on this. I can't get past that voice, though.
The voice is something else. So the only question is, Eamon Sweeney, why wouldn't you be going back to this album, as you said? You might have to now.
XXX, I would certainly be going back to. Like, that is a tune. All right. What a duet.
Stars, I'll go first to you on this one, Owen. Stars for Noah Cyrus.
Yeah, as I said, that angry cynic in me got pushed to the side very early on, immediately almost. It's a 4.5 for me.
4.5, and what are you saying?
I'll go three.
Three on this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be listening to it again over the weekend. It'll be at four before Monday, you wouldn't know. All right, that's Eamon Sweeney and Owen Glacken speaking to us about our three albums this evening. Noah Cyrus, I Want My Loved Ones to Go With Me, The Swell Season with Forward, and Wet Leg with Moisturiser. You had a good day. Good week at the turntable, the pair of you, this week. Let me tell you that on this coming Monday here on Arena, Helena Bonham Carter will be telling us about working with Pierce Brosnan and Gabriel Byrne. This is the adaptation of Niall Williams' novel, Four Letters of Love, heartbreaking novel. We wonder what the film will be like. We'll hear from Helena Bonham Carter on that. Enda Walsh is also going to be with us talking about The Baby's Room. This is the latest in the series of immersive theatre installations that Enda Walsh and Artistic Director of the Galway International Arts Festival, Paul Fahey, have been making this is the 12th one, so for 13 years at this point. And Rose Keating will talk to us about her debut short story collection, which is called Odd Body. That is on Monday's Arena, but that is our lot for this Friday and indeed for this week here on the programme. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields were our researchers. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator. Liam Mullen was on sound this evening, and tonight's programme was produced by Reg Luby. Don't forget that if you want to listen back to anything on the programme, you can do so on the webpage, rte.ie/arena, and things are all arranged there in podcast form, so you can download them and listen to them at your leisure. In the meantime, I wish you enjoy the sun over the weekend. Let's hope it stays. And John Creedon will be with you after the news, which is on now at 8 o'clock.